Yeah, let's give it up for Brad and the band, man. That's like a happy Father's Day Mumford style to you today, right? Man, Mumford and Sons on Father's Day. I don't know if they have kids or not. Are they dads? Do we know? They have a dad. They have a dad. Yeah, they have a dad. So that's awesome. Well, hey, it's great to have you here with us today. My name's Kurt, and if it's your first time with us, we're so excited to have you here at Cross Point. Happy Father's Day to all the dads in the room. Yeah, let's give them another hand. I know we all got to say it. I know my dad's here today, visiting from out of town, so happy Father's Day, Dad. You know, it's a big day, and we realize that, you know, regardless of whether your dad was that father figure that built into you or there's another male influence in your life, you know, we're just thankful for those influences that built into us at those significant points. Well, today, as you've already heard, we're taking a look at in week three of this series, The Art of Neighboring. We're taking a look at this question over these weeks of what if we just, you know, took seriously Jesus' words when he said to love your actual neighbor as yourself. He said to love your neighbor, and we sometimes think that means all kinds of other people except our actual neighbor, literal neighbor. And so we've given you a great little tool to begin to do this, which is this block map. You can go ahead and take it out of your weekly if you haven't filled one out yet, or if this is your first week with us. And we just said, you know, what would it look like if we learned and retained the names of eight of the closest neighbors that we have to wherever we live, wherever God is, you know, allowed us to live. And how many of you over the last 2 weeks have taken some step on this? Maybe you filled this out or you took a step. Just raise your hand if you, you know, filled in a block that you didn't have filled in. Keep them up. Maybe you had a conversation with a neighbor that you hadn't had a conversation with previously, or even dinner. Oh, yeah, you're like, dinner? No way. No dinner. All right, yeah, good. So you know, we're beginning to get traction. This is awesome. And for the rest of us, it's not too late. You can still begin this. And so if you haven't filled this out, it starts with your home in the middle. You just put your name right there. And then you just begin to go through and list the first names of the eight closest homes to your literal house. All right, your eight closest neighbors. Think of this like a map of your neighborhood. Now, if you live in a condo or a townhouse, somebody was like, well, Kurt, my neighborhood doesn't look like this. I'm like, well, I get it. Like, it's not all about you, you know, like where you're in the middle. But like, just think through, you know, if I live here, who lives like to my right? Who lives to my left? And write their names. Because one of the things we've been looking at is you can't love your neighbor, you can't do what Jesus asks us to do if you don't know their name. I mean, you can't you know, pray for your neighbor if you don't know who they are. And so this is a critical first step, and we're trying to set the bar really low. I mean, all you have to do is learn their names to start and retain them and write them on your sheet. And then, you know, it's got a fridge magnet. Like, just put it on your fridge so you can see it. Because we believe there's something incredible that happens when we just take the step to learn the names of our neighbors and become acquaintances with them. In fact, when we kicked this series off a couple weeks ago, one of our leaders was sharing with us. We have a staff and team leader meeting about once every 6 or 8 weeks that happens after our morning services over lunch for about 25 or 30 of our leaders. And so I just asked the question that first week. I said, hey, you know, how's this landing with you guys as leaders? And, you know, what's God maybe putting on your heart, you know, for your neighborhood? And one of our leaders, she said, you know, it's funny, I came to the first service, I went home between the leadership lunch and, you know, during second service, basically, I was sitting in my front room, and she said, you know, you gave us the challenge of just taking the first step to, if there's a neighbor who, you know, I don't know their name yet, and you see them, you know, walk over and just say something like, hey, it's crazy that I've lived next to you for like 3 years, and we do that, like, hey, you wave, and then we go on. Like, my name's Kurt, and just introduce yourself and get to know them, and then write their name down. So she said, I looked out the back window out to the neighbors behind us, and this is a family that moved in a few months ago. And she said, and the mom and the daughter are in the yard. And I'm like, oh, this is my opportunity to walk out and to introduce myself. And then she's like, I looked at her, and I'm like, they're playing in the sprinkler, and the mom's in her bathing suit. Like, what woman, you know, wants another woman walking over, you know, hey, my name's so-and-so, when I'm in a bathing suit? And so, you know, she was real honest. She said, I had every excuse, you know, not to do it. You know, because, you know, nobody had other reasons as well. She said, but I didn't let it stand in the way. I just took the step. I walked across the yard, you know, said something like, hey, it's crazy we've lived here for this many months, and, you know, I haven't came across to introduce myself. I'm so-and-so. And she said, in a matter of like 3 minutes, they were conversing about life and kids and family. And at one point, the lady looked at her and said, hey, you're all dressed up for like, you know, 10:30, 10:45 on a Sunday. Have you been to church already? Or she said, well, yeah, actually, I did. And she's like, well, we're looking for a church. Where do you go to church? And just simply, by being willing to take a step across the backyard and learn somebody's name. And so, you know, we're just imagining, we're dreaming, we're saying, what would it look like if every single one of us would just do something as simple as learn and retain the names of our neighbors? You know, last week we looked at the time factor. Now, you know, when it comes to neighboring, there's definitely a time factor. I mean, for many of us, it's like, I don't have time to neighbor. I have a limited amount of time. And so we have to leverage the time that we have for a sense of purpose. And we looked at how, you know, priority determines capacity. That's what we looked at. We looked at how our life, we think of it like a jar, and you have these big rocks, and you got, those are your priorities. You got to put those in first and let everything else fill in. And usually what we find is we still have room for more if we put the big things in first. Well, if Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, he said, these are the greatest things you can do, then how do we get those in the jar? And so we've been talking about moving the needle from being just strangers with our neighbors to learning their name, becoming acquaintances. And today, I want us to look at what it would mean and how we move from being acquaintances to actually beginning to be in relationship with the people that Jesus has, that God has put us right around. And this is where it gets a bit more scary for us, right? Because you're like, I actually got to meet my neighbors and not only meet them, but like spend time with them. Like seriously, like if you would meet my neighbors, Kurt, you would see it's not a good idea. Like just come hang out on my patio, you know, for 30 minutes and you'd see this a terrible thing. You would shut up right now. That's what you'd say, all right? But take a look at this. The Washington Post described it this way in this article, how well do you know your neighbors? They said sociologists offer various reasons for such side-by-side isolation. The rise in two-career couples means that fewer people are home during the day. We spend more time watching television and using the internet. In the suburbs, lot and house sizes have nearly doubled since the 1950s, increasing the distance between neighbors. And at one time, putting up a fence in the backyard was considered a somewhat of a hostile act, but today, new homes often come with fences already built in. Then there's the pervasive fear of strangers. It used to be that a stranger was just someone we had not yet met. Today, a stranger is someone who poses a threat. We've gotten to the point where anxiety is the default setting, where it's acceptable to live side by side, driveway to driveway, with other people for years, decades even, without knowing each other. You know, one of the realities, one of the fears that set in with us or that foster the fears is we live in a nonstop newsfeed culture. I mean, we you know, this impacts our neighboring. I mean, you know, in fact, I believe many of the news channels today. I mean, yes, they're reporting the news. I get that. But, you know, it's this constant fear-based reporting. It's like, did you know, you know, somebody's going to take advantage of you? You know, did you know, the guy next door, can you really trust him? He looks at, you know, I mean, we have these fear-based, you know, things that we hear, and it plays on our anxiety and fear and builds it in. And at any time during the day, we can turn the TV on, and there's a headline coming through of some major thing. You know, I mean, you know, we had like no snow this year, right? But it was like a half an inch is coming. They're like, polar vortex has returned. You know, fear, go to Kroger. I mean, the news just constantly plays into, you know, our fear and anxiety. And so we're constantly bombarded with news stories. And in fact, here's a few just from this last week. You know, here's one. Polygamous sect leader Jeff Lyles captured after 1 year. Like, man, he's weird. I think he was in our neighborhood this week. I think I saw him. That's what happens. We read this. It was like in Idaho or someplace. And yet we think it's happening right here. A Kentucky teen vanishes from her family's driveway. Years later, a relative is accused. You're like, I think he's on the other side of me. I think that's who lives there. That guy who never comes out. I mean, so we hear these things and we immediately apply them to our lives. Here's another one. After the GOP baseball practice shooting, investigators probe the trail of political anger. You're like, you know, some of us would go to Bill Ricky Park this week or, you know, Olio Fields. You're like, oh my word, are there any politicians here? You know, we immediately have these connects to whatever we see, you know, happen. And this impacts our neighboring. Here's one more. Ohio man set to appear in court, you know, in slayings of three women. I think I ate next to him at Arby's this week. I think he was really there. I mean, we take these things and it just builds the fear. I mean, it used to be you'd maybe get a newspaper in the morning. I mean, you'd maybe hear an alert on the radio. If you had time after dinner, you'd watch the evening news. And at best, if you were hanging out in a diner, coffee shop, or a restaurant, you'd get the latest of like what's going on in a 5 mile radius of your home. But see, today we're constantly exposed. You know, every 20 minutes, every 30 minutes to feeds that come in. And this causes a subtle little shift in our minds in the way we view people around us. We begin to think, oh my word, everybody around me, this is going to happen to me. There's actually a term for it. It's called availability heuristic. And availability heuristic is this idea that whatever is the most recent stimuli that I've seen or experienced, I immediately assume that's going to happen to me. right? And so if I see that, you know, somebody just got robbed, you know, not that somebody can't rob my house, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen right here for me. But we, whatever the stimuli was, kids, stay in, the robber's in the tri-state region, you know, we gather everybody in, and it's easy to be suspicious of people that we don't know, strangers. Another fear, you know, that causes us to often shy away is this, you know, this fear of long-term commitment with our neighbors, right? I mean, you're like, Kurt, what if I get to know my neighbors and I like start a relationship with them and I don't like them? Like, what am I going to do? I mean, you know, what if I get to know them and they're just like another person that's like stick a straw in me and suck me dry? You suck the life out of me, you know? You know, like, what am I going to do? I have to move. I mean, if I get to know them, they're going to be in my house all the time. Or here's another one. What if, like, I've seen their kids, all right? I have kids the same age. I don't want their kids around my kids. If I get to know them, like, their kids are going to want to play at my house. I don't want that. Or worse yet, what if they just want to be my friend? You know, and you're like, I don't want to be my friend. I don't want another friend. I mean, so we've all, you know, we fear that if I get to know them, they might become a part of my real life, all right? My real life. And so, you know, when Julie and I first moved into the first home that we owned, our very first house we owned, moved in the neighborhood, it was probably a year and a half or so, maybe 2 years before we got invited to like our first neighborhood party. And I'll never forget, maybe I was a bit naive at the time. I don't know. We were young homeowners and, you know, I guess I assumed that everybody around us kind of lived like us. I don't know if you ever assumed that. Like, I made like casual assumptions. Like, if you have a living room, you're going to have living room furniture in your living room, right? Or if you have a dining room, you're probably going to have a table in there. And so I was a little shocked when I walked into my neighbor's homes when we got invited in and walked into the living room, and it was like a big stage and, you know, huge speakers and bass, you know, subwoofers and a karaoke, you know, screen. And I'm like, this explains why our house thumps at night, you know? And we were cool with it, you know, because we knew they were having a good time. And then we, you know, walk in the living room, and there was no like normal furniture. It was like a blackjack table right in the middle of the room. And then, you know, like some slot machines and a big bar. And I had like a baby carrier, right? My son was like 12 months old or so. And I'm like, where should I put the baby? And they're like, just throw him on the blackjack table. You know, we're not going to use it for a while. And so I'm like, all right. So it feels like a casino. And so, you know, it was just kind of new to me. And the other thing was, you know, I noticed quickly as people began to arrive, there was a lot of drinking. I mean, there's a lot of drinking. And here's the thing. I didn't grow up with that. I didn't grow up with environments where there's a ton of drinking going on. But I began to realize that if I'm going to be a good neighbor, same goes to you. If you're going to be a good neighbor, you're going to have to get comfortable in environments where alcohol is the norm. I mean, you're just going to have to. I'm not saying you have to participate. You figure out your participation level. All right? You figure that out. I'm just saying that you're going to have to become comfortable with that. Right, you're going to have to come comfortable with dicey language, right? That's not exactly the way you might say it or what you might hear. I mean, we had our kids with us when we went to this first party. They invited all of us, and I just remember at some point thinking, man, I've got a 2-year-old, almost 3-year-old, and an infant, and I don't know if this is like the best environment. There are other kids there. It's like a norm for them. And I just remember having this thought of, man, this neighboring thing is kind of messy. Nonetheless, we jumped all in with our neighbors and just really started to connect with them and, you know, began, you know, hanging out at their fire pit. Our kids started cooking marshmallows over their fire at night when they were out. They're like, kids, come over. And, you know, we'd like rappel from the gutter to clean the gutters. I mean, what normal people do, you know. That's how they clean their gutters. They just rappel, you know. So I'm like, we'll do that. And so, you know, we'd kayak up and down the White River, you know, Fast Times, go-karting, all kinds of fun things. We began to socially connect. And over time, that relationship moved from an acquaintance, knowing them as Dave and Mindy, to a relationship. To where at one point, I'll never forget, we were doing this thing in our house. Every Tuesday night, we had soup night at our house, which was, like, two of my brothers were single at the time, so we'd invite them over for dinner as, like, a way they'd get a real meal, like, during the week, you know. And they were adults, by the way, but we invited our neighbors too, and so it was just a time to gather at our house for a meal. It was just kind of hanging out, connecting, doing life together. It wasn't a Bible study. It wasn't a small group. It was just soup night at Kurt and Julie's. And I'll never forget our friends who, you know, we started this relationship with. We were trying to get them to come to church. They wouldn't come to church. Every time we'd say church, their eyes would glaze over and roll back in their head, and they'd check out. And yet, every time we invite them to soup night, they're like, man, we'll come. We'll invite us to that again. We'll be over. And so we just began to think, what if church was a little more like this? And so we just kept doing it and connecting. And one evening, Mindy came over to me right before we were getting ready to pray. And she said, you know, Kurt, I know you guys pray, you know, in your house. And we usually pray. We just pray before the meal. We'd say, hey, we're going to say a blessing for the food. And then we just go on and eat and enjoy the rest of the evening. And she said, I know you guys pray. And, you know, I know you're probably going to do that in a moment. When you say that prayer, would you mind praying for my son? He just got arrested last night. I'm like, well, yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't mind praying for your son. And so then she went on and just said, you know, he's been involved in some things that have been pulling him in a wrong direction. And he's got even a steeper road in front of him now. And, you know, and she shared a little more. I said, man, absolutely. And I just remember, you know, having that conversation and thinking, you know, about how Jesus talked about neighboring and how neighboring really matters. And how being good neighbors actually changes both the people we live around as well as us. I mean, it really changed us in terms of how we view our neighbors. So many times we get to that point where those things never happen because we keep everybody at a distance. Out of fear, anxiety, what if I get involved? There's way too much drama going on over there. Way back in the Old Testament, you know, one of the early stories of Moses leaving the Promised Land and leaving Egypt, you know, we find that the Israelites, they come up to the border of the Promised Land, this place God has promised for them. And if you're not familiar with this story, I want you to take a look at this video. A few years ago, our creative team kind of captured kind of a humorous animated short of the story of Caleb and Joshua. So take a look before I explain it.
Okay, so a long time ago in a land far, far away, well, it's not really that far away anymore with the invention of airplanes. Okay, let's try that again. So a long time ago in a land you can get to nowadays by taking a few connecting flights, there was a guy. His name was Moses. You know, the Charlton Heston lookalike? He was like the boss of the whole church back then, kind of the way Kurt is now. So anyway, Moses had a brother named Aaron, who kind of looked like Charlton Heston too, just with red hair. The church back then was called Hebrews. They were kind of like a band. Well, no, more like a group of people who kind of ticked Pharaoh off when they left Egypt. The story is not about them. Okay, so a long time ago in a land you can get to nowadays by taking a few connecting flights and losing the better part of a day, and likely your luggage, there was another guy. His name was Caleb. He was one of 12 guys that Charlton Heston, Moses, sent out to spy on this piece of property that they were hoping to occupy in the not-too-distant future. They didn't have realtors back then, so they had to send spies. I think that system sounds like more fun. After the covert op, that's spy talk for sneaking around, guys 3 through 12 all decided it wasn't worth trying to pitch their tents in this land since all the neighbors were big burly dudes with mustaches and beards. So when the 12 came home, these 10, you know, numbers 3 through 12, started whining and crying to everyone who would listen that it was going to be too hard and that they were too wimpy. They even said, "We look like grasshoppers next to these dudes." Then Caleb and Joshua, the heroes of this year's story, stood up and ripped their clothes off. Not off, just ripped them. Not really sure why. Maybe that was a cool thing to do. Anyway, Caleb and Joshua said something wicked cool like, "Don't be afraid and we can do it." They always say cool like that in the movies. And then Caleb was like, "Dudes, we need to keep trusting God and he'll lead us into the land of milk and honey." So God smiled at Caleb. And then God took on the role of bouncer, not letting people into the club. But Caleb's name was on the list, so he got in, while the other dudes had to hang out in the desert. Forever. The end.
All right, so now you have like the overview of the story. So in Numbers 13, you know, the Israelites send these 12 spies into the Promised Land to see if, you know, they're able to, you know, kind of take the land. And all of a sudden, you know, they get these fearful reports back. 10 of the spies, they're like, man, the land is fantastic. I mean, it's flowing with milk and honey. It's beautiful. It's lush. But there are giants that live there, right? Giants. And there is absolutely no way we're ever going to be able to occupy that land. We're not going to be able to take that land. They even went as far to say that the video is actually correct, that they thought, well, these guys just think we look like grasshoppers. I mean, that's how we look to them. Now, two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, all right, they saw things differently. I mean, they could actually see how fear was distracting the other spies and causing them to not get to the place that God had in store for them. And they're kind of like, did they really say? I mean, did you talk to somebody when you were in there? I mean, did you talk to somebody and really find out if, you know, if those guys you think are giants are really that scary? You know, I mean, there was a lot to be afraid of. I mean, there were, you know, fortified walls, the potential of war, they had great weapons. But there's no way that they could actually tell that they were scary or not by just looking at them. You know, they're like, did they really say that they thought we were like grasshoppers? I mean, they're just kind of like, we're not buying this whole thing, but everybody seems to be really afraid. Now, here's what's fascinating about this story. See, fear changes not only the image, you know, of others in our minds, but what we assume they think about us. You ever notice that? When you're fearful, it only not only changes our image of other people, but it begins to change what we think other people think about us. And unfortunately for the nation of Israel, they believe these 10 fearful spies. I mean, so much so that God got angry with them, and he basically, you know, he's like, you guys are paralyzed. Your lack of faith is not going to allow you to go forward. You guys are just going to roam around out here for the next 40 years. So that's what they did. Stayed in the wilderness for the next 40 years. See, here's the thing. They were at the doorstep of what God, you know, had in store for them, and yet their perceived fears actually prevented them from experiencing what God had for them. And so 40 years later, they come back around, and the Israelites are back, you know, at the border to the promised land again. And this time, everybody from the previous generation, except for Joshua and Caleb, they've died off, so it's just Joshua and Caleb. And this is where this lady named Rahab enters the story. Now, Rahab was a lady who lived in the land. She's a woman who lived in the land the first time the Israelites went in as spies. And she gives the nation of Israel an entirely different picture. She says, you know, contrary to what everybody thought, that, you know, that these were big giants and you should be afraid of them. You know, she said, actually, Joshua and Caleb were right all along. She said, you know, when you guys entered into the promised land 40 years ago to spy around, you know, the giants were actually afraid of you guys, all right? They didn't see you guys as easy prey. They actually were like kind of fearful of you. In fact, here's how she writes it in Joshua, you know, chapter 2. Here's what Joshua says. Joshua says, Rahab said to them, I know that the Lord has given you this land and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what he did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. So she's like, you know, the perception of the Israelites is all wrong. See, the Israelites had feared their neighbors, the people in the next land, simply because they perceived them as giants. But what was fascinating is their neighbors actually feared them because of their God. Which just reminds us that fear has this amazing way of distorting our perspective. See, so often it's our neighbors who need to be rescued from their fears. But see, what happens is, you know, most of us have been conditioned to fear our neighbors. And most of our neighbors have been conditioned to fear us, and somewhere in there, we've got to break that cycle. And again, one of the things that happens so often here is we do this smooth little mental gymnastics move. You know, and we talked about this a bit 2 weeks ago, where we talked about how we turn our love our neighbors into a kind of a metaphoric love. You know, like I'm metaphorically loving my metaphoric neighbor. And basically, we do this because we kind of fall, you know, we look at the story of the Good Samaritan, which is accurate and true, but we walk away and we go, well, everybody's my neighbor. So, I mean, when I'm loving that you know, single mom in the office by just coming alongside her and taking her to dinner and just encouraging her, I'm neighboring. That's what I'm doing. I'm neighboring. Or when I go serve at the soup kitchen downtown on Friday nights, you know, third Friday of the month, man, I'm neighboring. I'm neighboring. When I fly to the other side of the world and serve on a mission work camp, you know, love on people and bring some resource supplies to help them out, I'm neighboring. That's what I'm doing. I'm doing what Jesus wants me to do. See, none of these things are bad. These are all good things. It's just that when we only pick and choose, you know, well, I'm going to neighbor right here. I'm going to fly into Indianapolis, not fly. I'm going to drive in and I'm going to, you know, serve, and then I'm going to come back home to the comfort of my home, or I'm going to go to the other side of the world and give 2 weeks of my life up, and I'm going to love on people. You know, when we're in and we're out, you know, we choose when we're on for neighboring and when we're not. But see, when you get to know your actual neighbor and you go from being a stranger to an acquaintance by learning their name and retaining it, and then you go from being an acquaintance to actually developing a relationship with them, guess what? They're always there. You can't turn it off. It's not like I can go in, get the good quick hit, and be like, oh, I feel so good. I mean, because really, a lot of those are about us, right? Man, I feel good about what I did. Now, when you love your neighbor, it's all the time. Which is probably why this freaks us out a bit. So here's what I want to challenge us on this morning. Remember, you know, there's three categories for all of our neighbors. I mean, we're either a stranger, an acquaintance, or we're in relationship with them, all right? And Jesus, he didn't tell us to go become acquaintances with your neighbor. He said, I want you to go love your neighbor. I want you to go love them. And in order to love them, you actually have to have a relationship with them. And here's what makes this move a little more difficult than moving from stranger to acquaintance. See, when you go from acquaintance to relationship and you begin to foster that relationship, it's not as clearly defined as the first step of just filling out the block map. All right, this is easier because I can quickly see where the holes are and I can go do it. All right, it's not as simple a tool as this because you can't program relationships. However, all of us can create environments where those relationships might develop and grow into something more significant. That's what all of us can do. And maybe this is the reason why Jesus spent so much time at parties. You ever notice how much time throughout the Bible he spent at parties? I mean, sometimes he hosts them, but usually he was going, he was enabling. His first miracle was turning water into wine so a party could continue. I mean, he's always getting invited. And in fact, here's one of them in Luke chapter 5. And I want us to read this. This is the account of Levi becoming a follower of Jesus. And Levi later becomes known as Matthew. That's how we know his name. And Levi responds to being invited into what Jesus is doing by throwing a party. Here's what it says. It says, after this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. Follow me, Jesus said to him. And Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. But the Pharisees were kind of the religious leaders, the priests, the pastors, all the ministers, the religious kind of clout in the community. It says that the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to his disciples. Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners and drinking beer from a bottle and Budweiser and 50 cent in the iPod, Because muttering is always makes you feel so good, right? I mean, it's like, just turn to your neighbor and mutter for a moment. Just mutter about something you don't like. Oh, man, my kids are... Doesn't it make you feel so warm and fuzzy inside when, that's what they were doing right here. All right, they're like, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and people who are far from God? Jesus answered them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, those who are right with God, but sinners. Sinners is just another word for people who have missed the mark or who are outside of God's design for their life. I've come to call them into repentance, a right relationship with God. There's a lot going on right here in this passage, right? I mean, Levi throws this party, and guess what? Jesus is more than happy to attend, right? I mean, after all, what's Levi doing? He's creating an environment where he can invite the person his life's going to spend a lot of time with over the next upcoming years, as well as his old friends and some of Jesus' closest team members, and he's just getting them all together for a party. And notice Jesus, at least from everything we can tell right here, Jesus doesn't think twice about showing up. I mean, Jesus didn't like, oh man, I don't know if this is the kind of party I should go to. No. I mean, in fact, Jesus even knows he's going to be criticized by the religious leaders. He gets that, and he goes anywhere. Now, let's be honest. The religious, it's always fascinating when I read these. It's almost like the religious leaders, it's almost like they're worried, like, Jesus, man, we're really worried about your walk with God. I mean, you're hanging out with the wrong people. Like, seriously, it's Jesus, all right? But it's like they're worried that he's like somehow not, as tight with God anymore or something. So they question Jesus' attendance at this party, which indicates it's not like a pizza and Mountain Dew party, right? I mean, this isn't like an after-church potluck, which we don't do here, by the way, in case you're wondering. We don't do those. But it's not like, this is like a party where people are having a lot of fun. It's like a party to end all parties, right? And so when the Pharisees question Jesus, get this, Jesus has every opportunity to apologize with spending time with these kinds of people, because that's what he's being questioned with. And yet, he does the exact opposite. He actually defends his right to be there. He doesn't back down. He uses this opportunity to hang out and party with a group of people who he knows do not have a religious framework built in, and who he knows he may otherwise never have a chance to interact with short of following through on the invitation of his friend Levi. Let me ask you, when was the last time you were accused of doing something like this? I mean, especially those of us who are, the steeped religious, or you come from a really steeped, church background, or, you tend to err on the high morality side of all the, I'm good, and everybody else, they need to lift their morality up, and, I'll never forget, alcohol was never really a big part of my life. I'll never forget, even as I became a pastor, I'd be like, well, I'm okay if Christians have alcohol. I mean, Jesus had wine, he made wine. I mean, Jesus drank wine. But, you know, for me, you know, as a leader, I mean, I'm going to not partake. And one of my friends just said to me one day, he's like, Kurt, you need to get over your badass self and have a drink. I'm like, okay. And he said, you know, seriously, he said, you know, it's not that it's a problem that you don't have a drink, but you're always talking that. And let me tell you how it makes me feel. When you say that, it makes me feel like, well, you know, real people who follow God, they can do this. But the rest of you, it's fine, but I'm better than you. Get over yourself. And I thought, holy cow. That was what I was projecting out. And I mean, and so, you know, sometimes we're worried. What are people going to say? I mean, and I'm not telling you to go drink or have, you figure that out yourself. I'm just saying, there's a line of drunkenness, not of just having a drink. But has your character ever been questioned because you ate and drank with people that weren't maybe as spiritually far down the road as you? I mean, when's the last time you kind of pissed off the religious group of people, you know, in your life because of the people you were hanging out with? This is what Jesus did. He was in the mix. I mean, he wasn't like down the street, 10 houses down in the window going, oh, man, the party's getting out of hand. I think I'm going to stay down here. I mean, no, he was in the mix of the party. He was right there. Because he understood the value of connections and relationships. I mean, think about it. It would have been made more sense to actually have a party for Levi, right? Let's like celebrate. Levi just decided to come to Jesus and be one of my followers. Woo, let's celebrate that. No. Levi is so excited about what's going on in his life. He invites all his friends who are far from God. He invites all his new friends and Jesus, and he gets them all together. And they have this celebration together. See, what I want us to see is when you have a backyard barbecue, when you have a cookout, when you have a party on the patio, whatever it looks like in your neighborhood, you're being like Jesus. You're making a priority of saying, you know what? God has placed me around these people, and regardless of their spirituality, regardless of what they believe in, regardless of how they act, I'm going to be in the mix because Jesus has called me to know my neighbors. See, followers of Jesus should be throwing the best parties, don't you think? I mean, enough of the lame parties already, right? You know, I mean, you know, it's like we need to be in the mix, not irritated on the sidelines of, oh, it's so loud down there. Listen, and this is coming, just so you know, I'm a terrible neighbor. I don't know if I've got a bunch of neighbors in the room. One of them's nodding back there. I mean, we have music coming from our yard all the time. We have speakers in the backyard. You know, it's loud. It's, you know, I mean, we serve our neighbors too, but I mean, we're like in the mix of what's going on. In fact, just 2 weekends ago, this was one of the parties on our backyard. We had a backyard movie night where, you know, we just throw up a screen and you know, some speakers, and we thump the music, you know, in the evening as the sun's going down, make sure everybody around us knows that, you know, hey, something's happening at the Walters pad. And you know, we threw some popcorn on the popcorn machine, and you know, there was about 35 neighbors that came out with their kids, adults and kids that just got around and watched Trolls in the backyard. Beautiful 75-degree night. You know, the kids were coming in. We're like, hey, there's popcorn. We got, you know, kids' beverages on the patio, and adults, you know, there's adult beverages inside. You know, help yourself. I mean, it was just a great opportunity to host a party and to connect on a beautiful night in our backyard. And we do this periodically, but one of the cool things about this night was we had a neighbor come out right around dusk, right about the time the movie was. She probably heard the like music, and then she couldn't get her granddaughter down to sleep, you know? And so she's like, well, I guess we'll join them. But, you know, whatever the reason, she walked out, had never socialized with us in the backyard. Brought her 2-year-old granddaughter out, and they grabbed a chair, and we gave them popcorn and beverages, and, you know, they watched the movie with us. Her name's Sandra. I met her for the very first time. And so, you know, out of something as simple as hosting a party. I mean, just imagine what kind of movement would begin in our community and in our neighborhoods if we went, you know, every single one of us and just learned and retained the names of our neighbors and then took that a step further and said, okay, I'm gonna plan something where I can connect some of the people I live around and get to know about their life. It starts right here. And we've been talking about the block map, you know, going from stranger to acquaintance. I mean, this is the tool. I mean, we fill this in, we get to know our neighbors' names, and this is the first goal for this series. I mean, we just think, man, if we could get everybody to learn the first names of 8 of their closest neighbors, this would be a game changer in our community. We really believe that. But see, then, the gateway from acquaintance to relationship, check this out, is hosting a party. This is what we see Jesus do. This is what we see his followers doing. Hosting a party. It's how you move into deeper relationship with one another, whether it's a block party or a barbecue or a cookout or margaritas on the patio, a movie party, whatever it is for you. You know, we're just trying to make it as simple as possible for us to see that when you fill this in and then you plan a party, there are good things that begin to happen in the community of your neighborhoods. Listen, you may not get everybody on your block, right? We don't get everybody on our block. But see, if you get two or three families when you host a party, they say, yeah, we'd love to come and have a barbecue on your back patio. That's a huge success. You just went from zero families connecting right around you to two or three others plus you. So three or four families sharing community, learning about each other's lives, getting connected in relationship. So here's what we're going to do this week. Why don't you take out your connection card? Your next steps are on the back of your connection card. And we do these each and every week. I want you to think through, okay, what's my next step, you know, specifically with my neighbors, with what's God just kind of asking me to do? You know, maybe for you, you're here for the first time, it's just returning next week, all right? You know, that's the next step if that's where you are. Maybe it's filling out this card. If this is the first time you've seen it, it starts here. You know, who are the neighbors I know? And then take the first step this week to meet somebody you don't know. Just go out like our leader did and say, hey, man, it's crazy that I've lived next to you for like a year, 5 years, and I've just waved and been like, hey, man, how's it going? But I've never learned your name. My name's Kurt. And just learn their name and then go home and write it down and put it on your fridge so you can see it. But then the bigger step I want to encourage us on this week is how do we move, once we know the names, into the relationships? And we want to encourage you to host a party. Look at your calendar. Throw a block party, a cookout, you know, some environment where you're outside in a turf where you can invite people that are around you and you can simply invite them to come and just do life together for an evening. See what happens. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't guarantee it's going to be a great time. But I can guarantee that when you begin to love and know your neighbors, good things happen out of that. And in fact, I want you to hashtag it. We're gonna kind of create a media buzz on this. You can hashtag it at XPT Neighboring, all right? Whether you're on Facebook or the Instagrams or, you know, whatever you use, you know, just tag it with that hashtag. Now, we want to prime the pump on this a bit today, all right? So one of the things we're doing is we have 10 block party kits for each service today for the first 10 families that claim them. They're going to be out at Connection Point, and they're going to have, you know, hamburgers and hot dogs and buns and condiments and, you know, table service, all that kind of stuff for about 15 to 20 people. And now I know you're like, well, I don't, Kurt, I can buy my own hot dogs. Well, you can, all right? The problem is, will you? All right? Because we can say we're going to do this. You don't have to take a kit to do a block party. But if you feel like, man, if I take one of those kits today, and they're free, by the way, you don't have to pay for them. All right? If I take one of these, maybe this will tie me in to actually hosting a party this week. All right, we'll do anything to kind of prime the pump. I mean, you have to take the steps. You have to look at your calendar, talk to your spouse, figure it out. All right, but there's going to be 10 of them. And so the only thing we ask you to do is there's a little number. You can text in your name with a keyword to our text-in number that's all out there. And that way we can just send you a link and how did it go. We're not going to, you know, track how many people you had or anything. But we want you to hashtag that as well. All right, we want to get serious this week about connecting with our neighbors. All right, and so I just want us to think, you know, our communities, listen, this is one of those things that could change our neighborhoods literally overnight by simply just planning an event to connect with our neighbors, right? Jesus gives us instruction. He said, well, you know, just love your actual neighbor. And we have to just wrestle through how different would our world look if we just begin doing that, right? So let's stand, and I want to pray for us before we get out of here, and then we're going to sing one more song. God, man, we just thank you for these pictures from Old Testament, New Testament of the things you call us to. How you're constantly calling us into something new, something more. In this case, in what it looks like to engage with our neighbors, the people you specifically planted us around. And God, we realize that, you know, we may have bought our house because, you know, we like the curb appeal or the school system or, you know, the number of bedrooms, but we also realize there's bigger things going on and that you planted us there in that place, that you had a hand in that, so that we could love on the people right around us. And God, this week, I just pray that you would break our hearts for the people that we've began to meet, for the names that we've just began to retain, God, that you would give us some space in our week so that we could plan an evening to just invite our neighbors to come hang out, connect, share life, get to know each other, and just see where it goes. We don't know where it'll go. But we know that when we're doing this, God, we're fulfilling one of the greatest things you said we could do. And so, God, we want to be about the things you're about. We realize, God, that when we're running after the things that your heart runs after, we're running in the right direction. So, God, just help us to do this week. We want to be world changers in our little corner of the world, God. We want to just change our little corner of the world. And we believe that that can begin even this week. So we thank you for this teaching. We thank you for your word, your scriptures, and we pray these things according to your name and your character, Jesus. Amen.